you have already made the most important decision in your life so far. It was an intersection for you. We make decisions every day, but some of them can shape the entire course of our life. This podcast explores those decisions and their consequences. You choose to turn this way instead of that way. Why? Why did you make that choice? And what happened to you next? That's what I want to know. Welcome to Intersections. I'm going to ask you to do something that I haven't asked you to do before, and it's to go into iTunes, if that's where you're listening to us, and give us a rating. And if you think we've earned it, give us a review as well. If you listen in SoundCloud or Stitcher or any of those other podcatchers that allow you to give us a rating, please do give us a rating so we know how we're doing. We would really appreciate that. Today I'm interviewing Kamal Pennington. We thank Camps 1910 for allowing us to use a booth while we recorded this. Kamal, tell us who you work for here in Oklahoma City.
I work for the American Federation of Teachers, Local 2309, that services Oklahoma City Public Schools.
That's one of those teachers' unions, isn't it? Yeah. A lot of stressful times here this fall, hadn't there? Been a lot of kind of stressful things going on in relation to the teachers' union. I know I interviewed you for one story I wrote about discipline issues.
Absolutely.
And things. And boy, you guys have been having to work really hard.
It's tough. It's tough for teachers. I think the biggest challenge when you know that there's a lack of resources and that our teachers are coming in, a lot of these teachers, because we have so many emergency certified, alternatively certified teachers that are coming in, they're having to learn on the fly.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult under a lot of pressure with less resources. So it's some challenges that we are really working to address.
Yeah, okay. Now, also, though, you're working really hard at something else. Tell me what you were working at. You were out there knocking on doors this afternoon.
I've been knocking on doors. I'm running for the State House, District 97 in Northeast Oklahoma City.
Now, you're running against another Democrat, aren't you?
Yes.
You're running against Chris Harrison, right?
Yes.
Funeral director on the east side of Oklahoma City, chair of the school board for Millwood Schools.
Yes.
Right, yeah. So, pretty well-known guy. So, this is going to be a tough race, isn't it?
Absolutely. And he's a great guy, and he's done good, too. So, I think it's great for our community to have a really competitive race and to compare our experiences and decide who's the best fit to represent. But, you know, I think that the unique thing about me is that I've spent time in classrooms working for AFT.
Right.
And that unique perspective of teachers, I think, is what really needs to be heard at the state capitol.
Yeah. So, Kamal, let's just kind of put this a little bit on a personal level now. This, you know, the nature of this podcast is really kind of get to know the people who I'm interviewing. What kind of family background did you come out of here on the east side of Oklahoma City?
Well, my parents, my mom was a teacher for 36 years in Oklahoma City Public Schools. My dad worked at Tinker for 25 years. I have three sisters. All three of them work for Oklahoma City Public Schools. Two of them are high school teachers. The other one works for the board. So we are an education family. I have several aunts and uncles that are teachers, so it's educators. That's who we are.
in your family. All right.
Yeah.
All right, good. Are you married?
Single? I'm not married.
Okay. And you're single?
I'm single.
Okay.
Living the political life here. So married to the job, I guess.
Married to the job, very much. You already have a political job with the AFT, don't you?
It is. No one told me that before I got it. I didn't know it was going to be this political. And
this year especially, it has been, hasn't it?
It has. It has.
It's
in the newspaper
really
a lot.
Time. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you probably didn't think that was going to happen, did you? You are your position. What do you do for the AFT? I mean, what does your position do?
We service teachers. So whatever they need, whether they're having a problem, a contractual issue with, you know, the school district, any dispute with the school district, if they're having a trouble with a parent, they're having trouble with a student.
Okay.
Even if they have trouble in their own personal lives, they call us.
Wow.
So we're out there every day going in and just talking to teachers and traveling around the district.
Wow. Yeah.
So you really have to, it really helps that you have so many teachers and educators in your family for you to know what you're hearing when you're hearing that.
Absolutely.
You know, when you're hearing a teacher talk to you, you really kind of know what they're saying, what's going on. Allows you to just pull in close pretty fast.
It's that empathy. You know, yeah. When I go into a classroom and I talk to a teacher that's having a hard time, I just start thinking about my own sisters and what they went through and what they tell me about what they've gone through. And so when you feel that connection to them, it makes it, when it's personal, you know, you have that passion for helping them. I'm telling you, it makes a difference. I didn't expect to feel that way because I'm a lawyer by training. So I always think about you're supposed to approach things objectively and and you're taught to do that. And so going in there and with that emotional side of it, I think has helped me build better relationships with teachers when I'm in buildings. So.
Yeah, and that is kind of unusual for an attorney to, but again, having so many educators in your family has really helped you to be able to make that connection, hasn't it?
Definitely.
Great. So you're an attorney by training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I just don't practice. I keep my license active, but I haven't practiced.
Oh, so okay. Okay.
I worked at a law firm for a little bit while I was in law school.
Yeah.
And then I knew, okay, I'm going into public service. I need to do something else. I don't want to bill any hours. I just want to be able to help people.
Right. Okay. Kamal, the main question that we ask, what was the most important decision that you've made in your life to this point?
I think the most important decision I made was the decision in 2013 for me to move from Oklahoma City, having grown up here, lived here my entire life, and move to Washington, D.C. to go work for Congress. I did not have a job. I did not have a place to live. I did not have a source of income. Wow. It was me and one of my absolute closest friends in the entire world. We're like brothers. The two of us, we just went.
Wow. You just picked up and went.
We just picked up. We took the bar exam. 2 weeks later, we were on a plane on the way to D.C.
Did you have an offer of a job waiting for you there?
Absolutely not.
You just got on a plane and took off for Washington, D.C.
We just left. We were so naive, though.
It sounds like jumping off a cliff.
It was. We were so naive. We thought, you know, we've got law degrees, we've done other things in our lives. Surely we can go and it will be, you know, it'll be easy to get a job. It won't take us too long. Definitely not. Not the case. It's way more challenging.
Law school is pretty expensive, isn't it?
So it is.
Most people are thinking, I gotta get out here, I gotta secure a job and start paying this thing off. So what went into that decision for you and your friend to just take off for Washington, D.C.? Basically, economically, you were jumping off a cliff.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Wow. I think the big motivation was it was going to be something exciting, and it was fulfilling a dream.
Yeah.
You know, as a political junkie,
I love
politics. Right. And you talk about it, you're a part of it. I was student body president when I was an undergrad, president of the Student Bar Association when I was in law school.
Okay.
Politics is my life. And so I thought, what better way to serve than working for Congress? You know, and being in D.C., a cool city. So,
yeah,
it was a great experience.
Did you have any kind of doubts when you went there?
Once the reality set in, you know, at first you get there and you're bright eyed and you think this is so awesome. You're around all these great buildings and it's, you know, that thrill is there. And then you start, I had some contacts when I first got there and you start contacting people and all of a sudden, you know, and you think that every next meeting is the one where somebody's going to promise you a job.
Right.
And then the next meeting.
Right.
And the next, and it goes on and on and on and on. And all of a sudden you're having a panic attack and going, now what am I going to do?
So how long did that go on?
It went on for, I spent about the first two weeks trying this, getting nowhere, no responses for jobs, till I ran into someone who said, you should apply for internships on Capitol Hill. So I said, okay. So I shifted the gears to internships. And so then I got a couple of internship interviews, and I did one, and I knew when I went in that office, when I met with those people, I said I was praying that they were going to hire me. And because it's just a vibe.
Yeah,
that I instantly got when I got there.
Right.
And so I ended up working for Congresswoman Kathy Castor from Florida. Loved that office, loved those people there. And I interned there for several months.
Yeah.
And when they had a job opening, they gave it to me. And so it was great.
So you finally got a job after how many months?
Ooh, 3.5.
And Washington, D.C. is a very expensive place to live.
It is. And so I was very fortunate. So I one of my meetings with contacts, someone that I had never met before, we were both OU Law graduates, and her name is Amy Padgett, and we were having a meeting. We had a great conversation. We were laughing, joking, talking about life, and she said, well, I don't know that I can help you get a job. And she's an attorney in D.C., and she said, I don't know that I can help you get a job.
Yeah.
But I can help you if you need a place to live, and you can come live with me and my husband. And I said, okay. And so I did.
So you had to be ready to just kind of be at somebody else's mercy like that. Now, they weren't mean people, or they wouldn't have invited you into their home. But that's what you had to do in order to economically jump off a cliff.
Absolutely. I mean, without them, without that opportunity, there's no way I could have stayed there. Definitely not for that amount of time.
So I'm interested in what it takes to survive when you economically jump off a cliff like that. You really were. I mean, you just like jumped on a plane and took off and just started asking around trying to find jobs once you got there.
I think it's staying busy is the key, so that you don't have enough time to think about all the doubt and how scary it is. And I will tell you, after the first, probably about 2 months, and I'm interning, so that helped. And you know, and you get interviews, and you're trying different things. And I just felt like, I remember that I felt, I'm just gonna have to go back home because I can't do this. Yeah. And I got on the phone with my parents, and I'm close to tears. And both of them said, I know they must have been standing in different rooms saying, you cannot give up. Right. You cannot give up. You have to stay there. You have to do this. This is your dream. And I swear the next day I had another interview after we had that conversation. Right. And so it kind of kept me going until this opportunity opened
up
in the
office.
So were
you an intern during that time?
I was an intern.
Unpaid intern. But it gave you connections.
Absolutely.
So internships really are critical to that kind of process.
Absolutely. I mean, and it gives you that experience of what being in an office is like.
Right.
I was fortunate to have people in that staff who gave me opportunities to try to meaningfully contribute.
Right.
At least the legal background gave me some help, but they were just so generous and so kind to me.
You got a chance to kind of learn the language. What is the most important thing that you learned about and in the value of that internship?
I think the most important thing is the patience that it takes to be effective in the legislature.
Right.
And I think the other thing is you learn to be good with people because you are the first line of defense when constituents call.
Really? So they put the interns up there on the front line answering the phones.
Right there, you're talking to people, and it's challenging. And you have staff who does it too. I mean, they're doing it too, but
everybody answers.
Everybody's answering the phone. But it is challenging. You get a lot of angry people, and I was there during the government shutdown.
Oh wow!
And I would tell people, well, they yell at us and say, well, you guys are getting paid for while we are just suffering in America. And I said, no, ma'am, we don't get paid to be here when the government shut down. The only people getting paid are the members. We don't get paid for that. Right. We go because we want to serve. And that's some lesson that if I could take it on the road.
Right.
There are so many great people who work for Congress. I am telling you, I met some of the most talented, bright, and it's not popular to talk about it. People don't like to hear that, I feel.
Right,
but
yeah.
We have some tremendously talented, great, hardworking people who work for Congress. And they get a bad rap because Congress has a lot of challenges. And and I understand it has not been as productive as we would like. But I'm telling you, you got some hardworking people there, for sure.
So reaching inside of yourself then, when you kept looking for a job, the internship helped for you to make connections, right? Helped out a lot.
Oh, yeah.
But comes a point where you have to start paying your bills or whatever. Why were you attractive finally when you weren't at first for somebody to hire you?
Well, there's so few positions that were available. And being a Democrat, just full disclosure here, I'm a Democrat. And there were not as many spots for Democrats because the majority was so strong.
Okay.
And so the hiring in on the Hill, where it works like a ladder often. It's not always, but often.
Right.
And there's limited spots. And so when there's an opening, you have to hope that you can get that spot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it relies on state connections. So, again, I'm a Democrat from Oklahoma, born and raised in Oklahoma. Spent no time in any other state. So there, and we obviously have an all-Republican delegation. Right. And so then a lot of times, you know, having that connection to a state is what leads people to at least even consider you. And so not having that made it more difficult for
me. So you're really swimming upstream, weren't you?
Definitely.
Right, right. So you get hired.
Yes.
Okay. How was your life different once you got hired in any kind of way? You can talk about money if you want
to. Oh, yeah. I could move into my own place, you know, and so that was great. I could, you know, you can just afford to live your life at first.
Right.
You know, you think I can afford to live my life, and pay for things and, you know, go out to eat and do all those things. But it doesn't take long before you realize that that salary is not that much money in D.C.
Not in D.C.
It does not go very far.
it looks big to an Oklahoma mind until you start paying for things in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely.
So you're here now, though. So you came back home.
Back here in God's country.
Why did you come back home?
I just knew that it was time. And I know that seems like a strange thing to say, but
that kind of sounds like what you said about going there in the first place. So you've really kind of reached inside of yourself most of your life, it sounds like, to make those decisions, isn't it?
You know, family support is a big deal to me. And that my family is very close, and that has helped. And I recall right before I was really starting to think about, do I want to go back home? And I spent time in Oklahoma City a long time for Christmas vacation, the Christmas before, and I remember thinking, this is my home. I love this place. And I miss these people, and I want an opportunity to...
But you got a job. Come on.
I know, and a good job. A good job with good people, too, for a good boss, for a great... I mean, it was an awesome...
Once you reached your goal, was it easier to think about making the next decision to move back home?
Yes and no, because... I knew I was going to miss those people. I knew I was going to miss this opportunity.
Right.
It's a great place. D.C. is a great place to be young and single and having a good, you know, you can have a great time. And it was a great, great experience. You meet all these great, intelligent people all day long. You know, it was
fun. How many years were you there?
2 years.
2 years.
Or just a little shy. I guess it was 1 month shy of 2 years. So
2 years. Yeah. Talk a little bit more about talking to constituents over the phone. And about what you learned about dealing with just that wide variety of people who call in. Some people who call in are just, you know, as sane as your grandma. Other people are just like, you know, generally pretty normal people, and they're just angry today. And then other people really, you know, seriously are crazy. They forgot to take their medications this morning, or they've been off their meds for the last 2 months, whatever. What did you learn about dealing with a variety of people when you pick up that phone? You don't know who you're going to get on the other end.
Hold it in. You have to have total self-control. I mean, because you cannot say anything that would offend those people that you're on the phone with. I mean, we're there to serve them.
They're the constituents.
They're our constituents. They're the reason why we're there.
Uh-huh.
And so we're trying to make a better life at their will, we're working for them. And so that was always our focus, was how do we serve them better? And so you instantly have to develop the self-control, because they say so many things that you disagree with, you know, frequently.
Yeah.
And I'm not a mouthpiece for, when I'm on the phone in that capacity, I am not Kamal Pennington. I am a voice for the congresswoman.
Right.
And, you know, and that is it. And it's not about how I feel or what I think.
Sure.
It's about listening to them and respecting them. And that takes so much self-control. I mean, it is challenging. I mean, healthcare.gov went down while we were there.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, my boss served on the health committee.
Wow.
So we got a lot of phone calls that of very, very angry people, and understandably so. But they, you know, a lot of the things that they said, I didn't necessarily like. And they make it personal.
Yes.
They make it very personal about you. They know everything about you and your family, and make so many assumptions about that. And you know, it's
so
tough.
But
it's great training. I wish everybody could do it.
Did you really have to just kind of put yourself in their position? You really have to just kind of forget that they really don't know anything about you.
Right. And it's hard to let that go. Sometimes it's you have to hang up the phone and you got to walk away for a little bit, you know, because somebody says something that's just, I can't believe you would say that to somebody.
So let's bridge that over to politics now. You're knocking doors.
Knocking doors, yeah.
Now I told you earlier on that Cindy Munson is my representative now. And I watched her go through two campaign cycles, knocking doors clear through the district, and you're doing that. You're out knocking doors now. Tell me, has that experience in D.C., answering just cold answering phones like that, has that helped you to deal with you not knowing who you're going to get when you knock on this next door?
Absolutely, because the surprises that you get, the people who really want very little to do with you, don't even want to hear what you have to say, just leave the materials on the door, you know, not even. And then you've got the people who invite you in and want to talk to you for a long time. And and just having to be prepared for no matter what you get, you've just got to be ready to handle it. There's an excitement to that I used to get when I have to answer the phone in D.C. because you never knew.
Yeah.
You never knew what you were going to get. So I enjoy that.
So you have to be kind of thrilled by the challenge of that and kind of the unexpected. If you're somebody that freaks out at the unexpected,
it's not for you. Knocking on doors is not for you because you never know what you're going to get. But what, you know, the fun for me doing it now in this capacity is it's me. It's a voice that I get to use, my own voice.
Yes.
And so when someone describes a challenge, you know, I get to tell them what I think we should do to solve it. And I enjoy that. And I enjoy listening to what people's real concerns are. And it's a variety of things that you hear, just like my job for AFT, which it's almost like that training in D.C. and then going right to service with AFT and now service, you know, in politics. It's been good.
Wow. So your experience in D.C. really has informed almost everything you're doing now.
Oh, absolutely. And you're forced to learn so much about policy on the fly.
Yes.
I mean, it's tough. You have a lot of responsibilities. They are, any congressional staffer, they're overworked people.
Right.
And you have limited time, and you've got to be able to understand things quickly and then explain them to your boss and then decide how we're going to explain it to constituents. And that is very tough. What our legislators right now are having to do, you know, $900 million budget deficit. What are we going to do? And we've got 4 months to do something about it.
What are
we going to say?
Yeah.
And that's tough.
Does that make it a little easier for you to run as a Democrat in a state where Republicans basically have been in charge for a long time and now things aren't looking very good?
Well, you know, I left an overwhelming majority for Republicans when I was working in D.C.
Yeah.
And, you know, the 2014 election happened, and that made our numbers even worse and the morale for the Democrats even worse.
Right.
And that was challenging. Mm-hmm. And then to come back to this state where, you know, again, the morale for Democrats, we're trying to. Luckily, people like Cindy Munson are giving us some hope. But I think that does provide me with a different perspective on how things are. And I think there's real hope in Oklahoma, at least, because I think we do a better job locally of taking away some of the ideological constraints. Yeah. We have a lot of that.
Right.
There's just a little less of that at the state level, I think, than the federal level.
Right. There's a lot of ideology out there, but you're saying it's maybe a little narrower bandwidth than at the national.
Yeah, I think there's more willingness for both sides, generally speaking, to talk to each other. Now, I'm saying that as somebody who is hoping to be in the legislature. I'm not actually in the legislature, you know, next year when we're having this conversation, we'll see if I feel the same way.
Okay. Now, why don't we shift a little bit here to your work with Maps for Neighborhoods?
Yeah.
I wrote about that. I quoted you in a story I did for Oklahoma Gazette back in the summertime, and then kind of mentioned you in a couple other stories and things. Tell us where you are with Maps for Neighborhoods. Kind of frame that in terms of your life growing up on the east side of Oklahoma City, certainly the east side. Just kind of tell our listeners a little bit about how people on the east side feel about the way City Hall has been treating the east side.
There is so much resentment. There
I think a lot of people in other parts of the city just don't get that. really don't get that.
You know, urban renewal was not kind to Northeast Oklahoma City at the end of the day.
Yeah.
The choices of the way that where highways were placed
divided
critical parts of Northeast Oklahoma City.
Right.
That created challenges for unity in the community.
Right.
There were a lot of challenges as far as school closures that occurred and the community not being in agreement with that.
Uh-huh.
There's a general sense that the city is not invested in trying to improve the infrastructure for Northeast Oklahoma City. So there's a lot of resentment there.
Mm-hmm. So maps for neighborhoods, the concept of actually going to the neighborhood and letting people in the neighborhood join in a process, not just an informational, one-shot informational meeting, which happens more than City Hall is willing to admit.
Yeah.
Where you go out there and have one meeting and come back and said, well, we had a meeting. You know, we had a meeting, but there's no real process. Questions get asked, maybe answers, maybe not. But there's not really a deeper process. So from your experience in D.C. And your experience growing up on the east side of Oklahoma City, how has that informed you in terms of leading the initial processes of just building support for the Maps for Neighborhoods idea?
I think the main thing for me is how D.C. helps and sort of the conversation we were having before. It's genuinely listening to what people's concerns are. And that was a critical goal. And then the other thing and skill that I've been able to gain from working in D.C. too is we've got to be able to speak with clarity after we've gathered this information, speak with clarity to the people in the city and our leaders in the city. And let me say this too, Brett. I think that Oklahoma City is an outstanding place because we've had great leadership.
Right.
And I would not be back here today if it wasn't for the things that MAPS has done to really make Oklahoma City great. And while there is a history of some challenges for Northeast Oklahoma City, I do think that we have the city's ear now to really make some change. And I'm proud of, you know, Willa Johnson was our previous city councilwoman who did a great job. We have John Pettis who does an excellent job now too. People who really care and I think are really trying to make some change.
Yeah. And the mayor, Mayor Cornett himself, has openly come out in support of Maps for Neighborhoods concept, hasn't he?
Well, he has been just very supportive. I think he likes the idea that we want to go and we want to listen and we want to be partners, that it's not an adversarial sort of relationship. And, you know, when I went, how we started with Maps for Neighborhoods is we started by just going to every city council meeting. We'd have our members go and just talk to the city council about our different vision. And when the mayor spoke to me about it, it sounded like they really want us to find a way to really get the voters engaged. They want to see that happen, and they want us to be partners in that. So
it's
exciting.
And isn't that what the Maps for Neighborhoods thing is all about, is engagement just at the neighborhood level?
Absolutely, and we design our community forums around that. I mean, we break up into small groups and have people work together talking about their ideas, and
that's interesting.
Oh, is that the
one on the northeast side? I came to the one on the northeast side. Have you had the one on the south side?
We had the one on the south side.
How did that go? Tell us a little bit, briefly a little bit about that.
Well, it was good. It's similar concerns.
And
that was what was surprising to me. I actually expected it to be entirely different. But it's, you know, Northeast Oklahoma City.
What were the three top concerns that were similar to when you held your community forum over on the northeast side?
Sidewalks, streetlights, blighted housing. I mean,
that's really the big three.
Those are the big three.
That's the big three in the core of the city. Anywhere in the city, you hear people complain about that, don't you?
It's true.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hoping that through this process, we can find out what are some real solutions to that. The other thing I think that's really great about this Maps for Neighborhoods thing is we want to find a way to spotlight these challenges so that we can get some things resolved. It might not be that Maps ends up being the avenue.
Yeah.
But we need these problems fixed. And so, but it's great. I mean, you get to hear from real people. I mean, you were at that forum in Northeast Oklahoma City. We had some rowdy people, a couple people who were upset. But
you know what? People came there to listen, to hear. They knew it was a forum. And the process of having randomly selected small groups, breaking that group up into smaller groups, and then bringing those concerns back to the whole group, which I used to use that in the classroom when I was a classroom teacher. It's an excellent process because it kind of atomizes the process a little bit. It gets it down into bite-sized pieces where people can really relate to each other. The thing that I noticed at that meeting was that some of the people who came there were not even aware of just kind of who their neighbors were. There were, you know, there's yes. kind of some, do you remember that? There was kind of some surprise of somebody saying, where do you live? Anyway, where do you live? Anyway, and they go, well, right here. I live right here. So in a lot of ways, people really don't know who their neighbors are. I mean,
it became so clear to me.
A lot of times they really don't know who their neighbors are, do they?
We are more siloed than you would think. And I was actually really surprised, and I thought, do you know that your two neighborhoods actually touch each other? They're right next to each other.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so it was surprising to see that people didn't know each other. And that's, again, the beauty of the process that we've used.
Yes.
Is we're building relationships, we're building community as we're moving forward.
Do you think you would have been as good at this if you hadn't have jumped off the cliff and gone to Washington, D.C.?
It's a tremendous amount of, I think, humility, because you realize your own limitations.
Yeah.
You know, your own, it's not enough. You know, you need to have other people who are there and supporting you and caring about you. And it's your job to give back so that the next person can have an opportunity to live a better life too. I owe this community everything, and my family everything. And so being a part of this process, it's personal. You know, it's deeply personal. When we start off in Northeast Oklahoma City, and I'm thinking about those challenges and the idea and this that we can just make this an even better place, it's exciting.
Great. Now, circling back to the most important decision you ever made, was that the right decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just paid
Without
off over
question,
and over again.
It was the best decision, and it was the right time to come back too. And it was both of those decisions, both to go and come back, were really great. It changed my life. It changed who I am. It changed the value that I have for community, for family. And I'm so grateful. I'm really, really grateful to have had that experience. And so, you know, my big push here and why I'm running for office now is so that the next kid who grows up in Northeast Oklahoma City can have a dream and get to fulfill it.
Good. Kamal Pennington, thank you very much. We're glad you decided to go to Washington, D.C., because you wouldn't have the skills that you have now. And we're really glad you decided to come back home, too.
Well, Brett, thank you. I've enjoyed it. It was fun. So thank you for having me.
That concludes our interview. There are several ways for you to catch this weekly podcast. Go to our website at intersectionsok.com, where you can subscribe, listen to episodes, read the backstory, and see photos of our guest. On iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and our Facebook page, we are Intersections Oklahoma. On Twitter and Instagram, we are Intersections OK. I always want to hear about the cool people in your life, so write to me. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is our awesome production advisor, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.